Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at the financial implications of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to talk about natural gas. And if you've been following the channel, you'll know that we've spoken a lot about natural gas. It's one of the biggest issues that's arisen since Russia's invasion, because Europe has been dependent on gas that's been supplied directly by pipelines for the last 15 or 20 years. And as the war started to progress and we saw a reduction in the flows of gas coming directly from Russia, it started to cause a massive increase in prices. And over the last 6 months or so, that's been the constant story that I've been reporting upon. High prices mean high energy costs, mean high electricity costs, and that's been feeding through into all of the inflation that we've seen in Europe and the rest of the world. But in today's video, I actually want to talk to you about the recent falls that we've seen in gas prices. Over the last couple of months, prices have actually been coming down. So we'll have a look at why that's been happening. We'll look at what's going on with regards to the storage levels in Europe. We'll talk about what's been happening with the weather, other forms of energy production, and what all of this means for Russia, Europe, and the rest of the world, because these prices feed through into global prices. So before we get onto all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I'm on a push for 200,000 subscribers, so if you could help me, that would be fantastic. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos, so if you don't have time to watch the whole thing, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, and Amazon shopping links. Now, the reason that I've made so many videos on natural gas is that it's a really important component for both Russia's economy, Europe's economy, and the global economy. Russia is the country that has the largest reserves of natural gas in the world. And although it ranks behind the USA in terms of the amount of natural gas produced, the USA is by far the largest consumer of natural gas in the world. And as a result of this, Russia is the world's largest exporter of this energy form. Now, the production and development of the natural gas reserves in Russia took off after the breakup of the Soviet Union in the early 1990s. And this was done in conjunction with a number of overseas multinational companies, such as Shell and BP. At that time, there was a global push to reduce the amount of CO2 emissions. And as gas produces only around 50% of the carbon dioxide that coal emits upon burning, it was seen as a cleaner and more efficient energy. And therefore, a lot of countries all around Europe decided to construct power plants using natural gas as their energy source. And this came at the same time that Russia was developing its gas industry. And so Russia constructed a number of major pipelines that delivered all of this gas directly to all of the power plants across Europe. So this arrangement worked perfectly for both Russia and its development partners in terms of developing all of that gas and all of the countries that wanted to move away from their dirty coal-powered electricity plants. And in 2021, Russia exported around 200 billion cubic meters of natural gas in a gaseous form, so this was through the pipelines, compared to only around 39 billion cubic meters of liquefied natural gas. So at the same time that Europe built up its dependency on Russian gas supplies, Russia also built up a dependency on the revenue from all of those gas pipelines. And prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, a large number of European countries had a massive dependency on those Russian gas imports. So that was a major problem for a lot of European countries at the start of this war, because they declared that they no longer wanted to buy any gas from Russia, but it's really difficult to replace large volumes of natural gas. But the situation was also a major problem for Russia, because in 2021, Russia earned around $43 billion of revenue from all of these gas sales, which equated to almost 10% of its total export revenues in the year. And those revenues were earned at an average price of around $20 per megawatt hour. The immediate reaction to the invasion of Ukraine from all of the European countries was that they declared that they no longer wanted to buy any energy products from Russia. But that is easier said than done, particularly when it comes to natural gas, because gas is difficult to transport over long distances if you don't have a pipeline in place. The only way to transport it is to liquefy the gas, store it under pressure, and then put it onto ships. But switching your supply chain to liquefied natural gas is not a simple process, Because firstly, you need to have the facilities to be able to regasify it. So take the liquid, turn it back into gas, and then feed it into your gas network. Now, the easiest and quickest way to set up regasification facilities are to use floating facilities. So essentially, you have a large tanker which can receive all of the LNG, and then it can convert it, and you send a pipeline from that tanker into all of your network. Now, it's only feasible to be able to do that if you're a country that has a significant amount of coastline. But even if you have sufficient amounts of coastline, you then need to make sure that you've got enough ports for these tankers to be able to come and dock, that they're deep enough, and that you have enough capacity, because most countries that have existing ports are already using them for other purposes. So you can't just stop all of your existing imports and exports to replace it with liquefied natural gas. Otherwise, it will have a major impact on your economy. So hopefully you can start getting a feel as to how difficult it is to be able to set up these facilities. Because firstly, you need to have the physical geography to be able to set it up. Secondly, you need to make sure that you've got enough capacity so you can have ships coming in and out. And these tankers are really big. They're not just small vessels. These are huge tankers. And then thirdly, you need to be able to pay for all of the infrastructure. And that's the biggest challenge facing most of the countries in Europe right now, is that switching away from the pipeline that's been in existence for 15 or 20 years and replacing it with these newly built facilities on the coastline is going to involve a lot more cost, and therefore is going to raise the price of all of this energy. And of course, not every country in Europe either has enough spare coastline to use, or indeed any coastline. There are a number of countries in Europe that are landlocked, so they don't have the ability to be able to set up these floating LNG facilities. So they're reliant upon other countries doing it for them and then importing the gas directly to them. So essentially what they're doing is exchanging their Russian imports for imports from other countries in some form of partnership agreement. So as a result of these physical and monetary challenges, it hasn't been easy for the countries of Europe to be able to stop buying Russian gas. And this table shows that in the first 100 days after the invasion of Ukraine, a number of countries, including Germany, Italy, Poland, Bulgaria, and Austria, continued to buy large quantities of pipeline gas directly from Russia. And it's estimated in those first 100 days that NATO nations collectively bought more than $54 billion worth of Russian fossil fuels. But during these first 100 days, a lot of countries were working really hard on setting up those new LNG facilities to try to get away from buying all of this gas from Russia. Now, on the flip side of the equation, the problem that Russia faces is that historically it's grown very used to sending all of this gas that it's taking out of the ground into the pipelines and into Europe. And that's a very easy way of exporting this energy. It involves the lowest amount of cost from Russia's side, and it gives it a maximum amount of profit. And as a result, Russia has not been developing its LNG facilities. As I showed you in the table earlier, Russia has around 20% of all of the natural gas reserves in the world. But because it's been exporting the majority of those reserves via pipelines, it hasn't been developing its LNG facilities in the same way as other countries that have large reserves. This table shows the countries with the largest LNG export capacity in operation as of July 2022. And you can see that Australia currently has the largest capacity of around 88 million metric tons, followed by Qatar at 77 million and the USA at 74 million. Malaysia comes in at fourth on the list with around 31 million and Algeria 29 million. And Russia, despite having the largest reserves of gas, are number six on this list and have a capacity of around 29 million metric tons per year. And this is now going to be a major problem for Russia, because Europe has stated that it no longer wants to buy any of the gas through the pipelines. So Russia is going to see an enormous fall in its revenues from natural gas. And the only way that it's going to be able to replace these revenues is by liquefying that gas and exporting it over the seas. And there are a number of issues facing Russia on that front. Firstly, it's going to have to construct new capacity to be able to convert that LNG. And that is an expensive business. These plants cost billions of dollars to construct. And the need to build these new plants is coming at a time when Russia has lost all of its trading partners. So all of the oil and gas majors that it's been dealing with historically, such as Shell, BP, ExxonMobil have all stated that they no longer want to invest in Russia. They've all exited from their facilities. So they don't have any partners to be able to pay for these facilities. But more importantly than that, they also don't have the technology. Because of the sanctions that are in place, they're now facing a carte blanche ban on all of this new technology. And Russia needs cutting-edge technology because a lot of its gas fields are located in really difficult environments. So these are quite far north and have extreme temperatures. So it's challenging to be able to get that gas out, to liquefy it, and to be able to load it onto ships. And that's the other problem that Russia is facing as a result of the sanctions. A lot of the shipping companies, the insurance companies, the logistics companies are all from the West, and they've all applied sanctions and therefore no longer want to deal with Russia. So as well as being able to build the plants, which is a problem, they also need to find enough shipping capacity to be able to transport all of this LNG. So Russia is facing some major logistical problems as a result of having to switch away from gaseous supplies into LNG supplies. And because it hasn't been developing this side of its business historically, it's just not going to be able to replace those lost revenues anytime in the near future. So let's talk about what's been happening to natural gas prices over the last few months. This chart shows the movement in European natural gas prices over the last 12 months. Now, if we just pick out a few key dates to have a look at what's been happening to those prices. This time 12 months ago, the price of a megawatt hour of gas was around 75 euros. And although there was a brief increase in prices towards the end of 2021, the price was still sitting at around about 75 prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Immediately after the invasion started, prices skyrocketed to around $230. And this price movement was due to the fact that the markets were concerned that Russia was going to switch off all supplies overnight. Now, that obviously didn't happen. And in the spring and early summer, prices stabilized to around 100 euros. However, as the war continued and we started to see developments such as Russia switching off their supplies to Finland, Poland, and Bulgaria, and then reducing the amount of gas that they were sending through the Nord Stream pipelines to Germany, we started to see prices increasing dramatically. And towards the end of August, 1 megawatt hour of gas was trading for around 340 euros. Which is an increase of around 450% compared to where prices were trading prior to the invasion. However, over the last couple of months, we have seen a marked reduction in European gas prices, and they're now back to trading at around $100 per megawatt hour, which at face value seems surprising because during the last couple of months, we have seen the explosions take place at the Nord Stream gas pipelines, which means that it's now virtually impossible for Russia to be able to import the amount of gas that it was previously importing, even if the European countries wanted to buy it. So let's talk through the reasons why prices have been falling so rapidly in Europe. Well, the main reason that gas prices have been falling in Europe over the last couple of months is that we've seen a reduction in demand. And as you'll know if you follow the channel, I love to talk about supply and demand and price. And gas is a great example of one of these markets. As demand comes down, then price will also come down. So the big question is, why has demand been coming down? Well, there's two main reasons for that. Firstly, we've seen very mild temperatures. So weather is a very important factor when it comes to gas demands, because gas is being used for two main reasons in Europe. Firstly, it's being used for heating and cooking by consumers. So a lot of countries pipe the gas directly into households, and those households are using it to fire up their boilers to heat their homes, and also for cooking if they've got gas cooking facilities. Now, when you have warmer temperatures like we've had over the last couple of months, there is a very small amount of demand for heating because people don't need to heat their homes. And also we've seen an end to all of the extreme heat waves that we saw earlier in the summer that was increasing the demand for air conditioning. So over the last couple of months, the milder weather has meant that there has been a reduction in demand for both heating and electricity, and that means that there's been a reduction in the demand for gas. But in addition to the weather, we've also seen a reduction in the demand for gas as a result of a lot of European countries getting to the point where they've got their storage facilities almost 100% full. At the start of the war in Ukraine, the European Union issued a directive to all of its members stating that they had to get to 80% capacity on all of their storage to make sure that they had sufficient gas in reserve to get them through the winter period in the event that Russia cut off all of the supplies. So over the last 6 months or so, we've seen all of the countries of Europe buying as much gas as they can from Russia to put into storage to give themselves some headroom. And we've now got to the point where that extra demand that's been in place for the last 6 months is starting to tail off. This table shows the current position with regards to capacity. And as you can see, the European Union as a whole has filled around 94% of all of its gas storage capacity. And you can see as we scroll down through this list that most of the major countries in Europe now have above 90% capacity. So we're getting to the point where they're not buying all that extra fuel. So therefore, demand is falling for Russian gas. They've filled all of the storage. Everybody is now prepared for winter. And so demand is on the wane. So I wanted to touch briefly on consumer prices, because when we talk about gas prices, everybody thinks that we're talking about the amount that you're going to pay for your bill, but it doesn't actually translate directly. It's a little bit like when you go to the pump to fill up your vehicle and you look at the prices and think, why are these prices not coming down as quickly as what I'm reading in the press about the movement in oil prices? There is a time delay. And the reason for that time delay with regards to gas and electricity prices is because most of the companies who are dealing in the markets are hedging their position. So I'll talk quickly about what a hedge is. So if you're a company that has to provide electricity or gas to your consumers, you do that on a contractual basis. So you'll have a contract in place with all of the consumers in your area, and you'll have a fixed rate agreed for a certain period of time. So that might be for the next 3 months or 6 months or 12 months, depending on what sort of contract terms you've got. And at the moment, a lot of companies in Europe are having their prices capped by the authorities. So they're being told you're not allowed to charge above a certain amount per therm or per unit because we don't want to put more pressure in terms of inflation in our economy. So in order to protect themselves from fluctuations in the market prices, they want to lock in a rate to make sure that they've got some form of guaranteed profit. So based on historic consumption, they can work out how much gas and electricity they will need for a certain period of time, and they can then go into the financial markets and hedge that position. So they will agree a contract with a market maker to buy a certain amount of gas and electricity at a fixed price. And that could be for the next month or 3 months or 6 months. So that means that that deal is locked in. Now, if the price of gas comes down in the international markets in the same way as I've just shown you on the graphs that it has done over the last couple of months, that won't affect that energy company because they've hedged their position. They've effectively bought forward for the next 3 months or 6 months at an agreed price. So movements in the market day-to-day price don't have any impact. And therefore, that company can't pass on those price savings in the global markets to their consumers because the deals are completely locked in place. So it's only over the longer term that we'll see the benefit of these movements in gas prices being fed through to consumers. And of course, if prices go back up, then obviously those gas price falls that we've seen over the last couple of months will never be passed on to consumers. Because if it comes to the point where the companies are looking to hedge for another 3 months or another 6 months and prices have bounced up again, then that means that they'll be at a higher rate. So that's why in Europe right now, the most important factor is the price caps that are being set by the authorities because they know that prices have gone off the scale. When you've got a 450% increase in gas prices, nobody can afford that. That would bankrupt a lot of people. They wouldn't be able to pay for their energy bills. And of course, it's a fundamental requirement for human existence, being able to heat your home, to cook, all of those things. So governments are looking after their consumers. That's why they're applying caps. And the energy companies are being squeezed in the middle. And that's why we've seen issues such as Uniper in Germany having to be nationalized. They've been bailed out by the authorities because they're making massive losses. They were buying gas in the international markets and they were being capped in terms of how much they could sell that for. So they ended up making massive losses on all of those purchases. Now, that's not a sustainable position for a commercial entity, but if you're a governmental body, then you can absorb those losses. And it's likely that if we see gas prices staying at these high levels, even though they've come down over the last couple of months, they're still at very high levels compared to where they were over the last 5 years, then we may see more of these companies being nationalized because it's impossible to make a profit at the capped rates that are being set by the governments. So I wanted to just cover that off because, as you know, on this channel, I'm always trying to translate what's going on in the global markets to what's happening in your household. So you may have been sitting watching this video thinking, well, prices have been coming down for the last couple of months, but my energy bills have been going up. How does that work? Well, this is the reason, because energy companies are locking in at these longer term rates. And also the capped rates that are being set by the governments are actually below the level where all of these energy companies would be charging you if they were allowed to pass on all of the movements that have come through as a result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. So one of the big questions that everybody's asking right now is, how cold will this winter be? Will this be a warm winter or a cold winter? Because that will have a massive bearing on what happens in terms of the European economy over the next few months. If we get a particularly cold winter, then that will increase the demand for both gas for heating and cooking and also electricity. And that will cause all of the European countries to use up their gas reserves quicker and could potentially result in Europe running out of gas and therefore having to have blackouts and periods where they don't provide any energy supplies to the consumers. Or it will lead to massive increase in costs because European countries will have to pay more and more to import more electricity and LNG and other things like that. So from an economic perspective, a cold winter will be extremely bad news for Europe. And as I've mentioned many times before, Europe is connected to the rest of the world. So if we see a contraction in the European economies, that will have a knock-on impact to all of the other economies in the world. So a cold winter in Europe will be bad news, not just for Europe, but also everybody else. But on the flip side of that, if we have a warm winter period, then that will reduce the demand for gas. And therefore, countries will probably have enough in reserve to get them through. And that will be beneficial to the European economies because they then won't have to pay more for all of those energy supplies. That will mean consumers have more money and potentially means that the impact of the recession that we think is coming in 2023 will be lessened, and that will be beneficial for the rest of the world because if Europe is doing better, then so will the global economy. Now, forecasting weather is notoriously difficult, particularly over the long term. It's difficult enough to do it on a daily basis, never mind for the next 3 to 4 months. But I wanted to share with you some data, just as a bit of fun, really, to see what the current expectations are for the winter in Europe. And as it sits at the moment, there is actually some methodology in terms of being able to forecast whether or not this is likely to be an extreme winter in Europe. Because global and European weather patterns are currently influenced by what's called La Niña. And La Niña is the cold phase of El Niño, and you may have heard of El Niño before. And this is all to do with the movement of global air. And the winter of 22-23 is actually the third consecutive year that global weather will be influenced by La Niña. And this is only the third time that this has happened since record keeping began. The last one was between 1998 and 2001. So weather forecasters are currently expecting that this winter period will be very similar to what happened last winter. So if that does happen, then temperatures will be either at normal or above normal for where they're expected through the winter period. We may have extreme cold snaps, so very short periods of cold weather, but it's unlikely as it stands at the moment that we will have a prolonged cold winter. So overall, that would be really good news for the European economy and the global economy, because it means that countries would then have a chance of being able to get through that critical winter period without needing to have any emergency gas supplies. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because a lot of the videos that I've posted talking about natural gas, we've been talking about rising prices, what could be the worst case scenario. And it's good to see that prices are now starting to come down. And that's as a result of reduced demand. And one thing that I didn't mention earlier is that we're also seeing a global reduction in demand for a lot of other items right now because we're seeing a slowdown, because China is slowing down. That's meaning we're seeing a reduction in oil prices because they're not buying as much oil. So over the next few months, we may see the global economy starting to drag prices down as we see a global slowdown. But specifically talking about today's video, we've seen a reduction over the last couple of months as a result of Europe not wanting to buy as much gas. Firstly, they've got their storage capacity up to acceptable levels. And secondly, we've had a mild period, which has meant that there hasn't been as much generic demand for gas. And all of that is good news for the European and global economies, because it means that Europe is not spending as much on energy, and therefore it may be able to deflect some of the impact of the forthcoming recession. Now, in terms of the impact on Russia, it's the flip side of what we're talking about. Russia is dependent on energy exports. It sells massive amounts of gas and oil globally. That is the heart of the Russian economy. In 2021, Russia earned over $43 billion from selling gas. And including oil, it earned over $150 billion in total. Now, that represented around 30% of all of the revenues that Russia was taking in. Now, as Russia sees its markets declining, it's going to see a massive fall in those revenues, particularly for gas. As we discussed in some detail earlier in the video, it's not easy for Russia to be able to replace the lost sales of European gas with other sales, because it's been selling that gas through pipelines in a gaseous form. In order to sell that gas to places like India and China, it needs either to build new pipelines, which will cost a huge amount of capital and will take a long period of time to complete, or it would need to convert that gas into LNG and then ship it. And as I discussed earlier, that's going to be a major problem for Russia, because they simply haven't built enough LNG capacity over the last 10 years. They got a bit lazy, they got a bit complacent, thinking that they just keep selling this gas through pipelines to Europe and that it would never end. But unfortunately for Russia, it is ending. It has ended for a number of countries already. We've seen the Nord Stream pipelines being blown up, so they're no longer operational. And this is causing major problems for Russia, because they've just lost around $40 billion of revenue that they simply can't replace. Europe is managing to find a way to survive through this winter. It's got the capacity now built up in the storage, and it's putting all of the replacement LNG facilities in place rapidly. So Europe will be okay. It will have an impact on the European economy, because it's costing a lot more. So we are starting to see that feeding through. We're seeing a slowdown in a lot of different countries. It's likely that we're going to see that recession kicking in over the next few months. But for Russia, the impact is more immediate and it is much greater, because they have lost this huge source of revenue and they've now got these facilities that are all in place that they can't do anything with, because they can't divert those gas supplies to anybody else. So this is a really serious situation for Russia. And it comes at the same time as they've lost all of their trading partners for gas, and they've lost access to technology and knowledge. So this is going to be a major problem going forward for this whole industry in Russia. Now, unfortunately, as I touched on towards the end of the video, the fall in gas prices that we've seen over the last few months hasn't really been translated into what people are paying for their household budgets. Because of what's happening in the industry, a lot of the energy companies are going bust right now. It's very difficult to be able to make a profit when you're being told that you can't sell your product at above a certain price, even if it costs you more than that price to buy it in. That's impossible from a business perspective. If your input prices are more than your output prices, then you're doomed, because you're guaranteed to make a loss. And that's what's happening to a lot of businesses all around Europe right now. Now, over the course of this winter, I think it's very likely that we will see a lot of these companies either going out of business or being nationalized. So we're seeing a change in the industry. And that's a really interesting knock-on impact of this war, because over the last 30 years, we have seen massive deregulation in Europe. We've seen all the rules changed, and we've seen a lot of competition. A lot of smaller companies came into the energy sector. You could pick up really cheap 12-month contracts with all of these new operators. And what a lot of people were doing was switching supplier one year after the next. And it worked really well for consumers and for these small businesses. All of that has been destroyed by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The smaller businesses that were set up didn't have the financial capability to be able to survive this shock. And unfortunately, even the larger companies in Europe are also finding that they don't have the reserves or the financial capacity to be able to get through this storm. So I think it's likely that over the course of this war, we will see a complete change in the energy sector. And in Europe, it may well go back to the old days of having a very limited choice in terms of consumers, because we may see that there's only a small number of companies who make it through this whole period. The weather this winter is going to have a really big impact on what happens in the global economy. Now, it's not very often that I would say that, because it's impossible to know what's going to happen with the weather from one day to the next. But if we get a warm winter this period, if it's above average, then that will be good news for Europe and good news for the global economy. It will be bad news for Russia, because that means that nobody will need to buy their energy. There won't need to be any special arrangements put in place for emergency supplies to be sent to Germany or Italy or any of those countries. And therefore, Russia won't get the revenue that they're looking to get from all of their energy products. But also from a political perspective, it means that President Putin won't achieve his objective of causing maximum chaos in Europe. One of the reasons that he's been cutting off gas supplies and trying to squeeze the pressure on Europe is that he wants to see the financial sanctions dropped. He wants to take Europe to breaking point where they can't afford to buy any more energy, where companies are forced out of business, so that a deal has to be agreed. That's what he's trying to achieve from a political perspective. If we get a warm winter, then all of that will be wiped away, because Europe will be able to survive. It won't need to come back to the table and try to beg Russia to give it any energy. It will be able to get through it. And that's really bad news for President Putin. Now, on the flip side, if we have a very cold winter, then obviously from Europe's point of view, that's the worst case scenario, because everybody is building up their reserves. But the reserves that are in place are not sufficient to get through an extremely cold winter. They will run out some point during January or February if we get one of the coldest winters we've ever seen. And that then would throw Europe into chaos, because it's not easy to replace those gas supplies overnight. The LNG facilities take time to build up. So even if they wanted to import more LNG, it wouldn't be possible. There's already stories of ships full of LNG circling around ports because countries don't have capacity to unload it and regasify it quickly enough. So it's not just a monetary issue of having to pay more for the LNG. There's an actual capacity limit. And if we get to that point in Europe, then we could see blackouts. We could see companies and individuals not having enough electricity, and that would have a further detrimental impact on the economy, because you'd see a reduction in output and therefore GDP would fall, and therefore the recession would be accelerated. So that's the worst case scenario from Europe's point of view. From Russia's perspective, a really cold winter would be beneficial from the revenue and the pain point of view for Europe, but it would be bad news in terms of the offensive that it's involved with in Ukraine. Because as we've talked about before, a cold Russian winter is very bad news if you're in some form of military conflict. That's what prevented Nazi Germany from being able to successfully invade Russia in World War II, because their tanks all froze in the field. And if we did have a very cold winter, then that would impact on what's happening on the ground in Ukraine. But it would be beneficial from President Putin's chaos perspective, from a political side of things, because Europe would be under the maximum amount of pressure at that point. Now, fortunately, as I touched on before, as it stands at the moment, forecasters expect that this winter could be one of the mildest on record. If it follows what happened last year, then Europe would probably be okay. But we'll have to wait and see exactly what happens on that front. So hopefully you found today's episode useful, informative, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.